Today is June 13th, 2018, and this is episode number 466 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
I'm Brian Chaffin, and my blood pressure is up to here! Here, I tell you! Get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast. You can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment or question anything, comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note over at Facebook at facebook.com/groups/contextmachine.
So, too much sodium in your diet?
Sure, let's go with that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, okay, all right, let's be honest. I work at home.
Mm-hmm.
I lead a too sedentary lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
I could eat better, probably too much sodium. Yeah, there's a bunch of contributing factors here.
All right, well.
Most of which are on me. So just to be clear.
So cut back on the salt and everything's fine.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah. Hey, did you know we have a sponsor today?
Oh, really? That's good news. Does it happen to be LinkedIn?
Yes, LinkedIn Jobs.
Oh, that's good stuff. That
yes,
is good stuff.
Is. Yep. Not too much sodium there.
Not too much sodium at all. Good for you. Good tasting. I don't know. We'll get to that later, though, right?
Yeah, of course we will. That was just the foreshadowing part.
Just the foreshadowing part. I like that. All right. Well, speaking of foreshadowing.
Yes.
We have been shown the future, Jeff.
So I hear.
That was actually a proper segue. I'm slipping.
I know. It's kind of weird. I'm glad I'm sitting down.
Yeah, I know. That's
it totally caught me off guard.
Doesn't seem right at all. Anyway, yeah. We have been shown the future. The future was posted to Twitter last Friday.
And what was the future, Brian? What is the future, Brian?
All right. So, Harley Turin, developer, iOS developer. Maybe a macOS developer, actually, too, but definitely an iOS developer. Did at the end of WWDC, he posted a demo video using ARKit 2 and iOS 12. And, you know, when I say that, I mean developer beta 1s for both of those. Developer yep. Betas 1.
Yep. Yeah, we're still on just developer beta 1. And actually, it's not fair to say we're still just there because, holy crap, developer beta 1's been out for a week and a half now. That's it.
Didn't I do developer beta 2? Oh, no, that's not on the iOS 12. That's actually for 11 4.1.
Yeah. See, it's confusing right now because we have two beta tracks happening simultaneously.
Extra confusing, Jeff, because for some reason, High Sierra went from 11.5 to 11.6 rather than 11.5.1. Did you catch that?
Yeah, it's kind of confusing.
I'm not really. I mean, that's a weird one. I mean, because iOS 11.4.1 and tvOS 11.4.1 and watchOS 11. iOS, watchOS 4 point, whatever it is. they're all maintenance releases.
Right.
And usually, for High Sierra, a 0.5 to 0.6 release would be, like, new features. But there aren't any new features that we know of in this 11.6 developer release cycle, and yet we're doing 11.6 instead of 11.5.1, and that's just kind of weird. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong or that, you know, Apple is doomed. It's just weird because we've never seen that.
Yeah, it's just kind of weird.
It's just kind of weird.
And I haven't seen anything new in 11.6.
No, there nothing is known to be new. It seems like it's 11.5.1, but it's being called 11.6.
Well, maybe there's some surprise in there that Apple's holding back, which kind of defeats the purpose of beta.
That's a fair point. So anyway, end of WWDC last week, Harlan Turin. No, I gotta get it right now. Okay. So Harley? Harlan.
Oh, maybe if I had a web browser window in front of me, I could double check.
Yep, I got it. We got sausage, Harley Turin. All right, I had it right the first time. So he posted just a real simple video. He's like, I don't even know where he is. He's somewhere in San Jose, I think. Still in San Jose. I think. Who knows? Whatever. He's
someplace where there's solid ground.
Yes, somewhere where there's solid ground. Excellent. And it's a door stoop. And he throws a couple of cards down on the door stoop, and then he attaches some. He's looking at them through his iPhone, where he's running some developer app that he's made with ARKit 2 and iOS 12, and he attaches data, the number of points I think it is, to
One's a loyalty card, and the other one is like a bus pass.
Yeah. And then that data stays attached as he picks up and manipulates the cards. I mean, like, we've seen this sort of thing in like commercials for years now. Mm-hmm. But those commercials were done in post. That data was added in post production using high-end software, possibly high-end machines, but possibly Macs. Ordinary Macs or ordinary PCs, too, whatever. But high-end software was used to attach that data, and the whole thing was done in post. And no one saw it while it was happening. But what Harley Turin did was live.
Yeah,
like 4 days after the developer beta 1 was released,
which means he found time somewhere along the way to install iOS 12. Install the new developer beta of Xcode, and then whip all this stuff up and create a demo video, all while WWDC is still going on.
Okay, well, to be fair, that's what many of the developers go to WWDC do. I mean, yeah, everyone's excited. So I mean, mm-hmm. And I'm not minimizing what he did. I'm heaping praise on him for what he did. But this practical demonstration that he put together with only a few days, let's put this yet another way, he'd only had a few days to play with it, and that was a few days of, developer courses and seminars and sessions and. Meetups and all this other stuff. So, very little time for.
Right. Yeah. So I'm assuming when he looked at everything that was on his schedule and realized there's not enough time in the day, he said, who needs sleep? And still was able to produce this app that was showing him in real time stats about a loyalty card and his bus pass. But it could have been anything. I mean, it could have been his bank card, I suppose.
Yeah, and the data moved with the card, and that's the important thing here. That's one of the things that ARKit 2 is bringing to the mix. And it's super impressive and everything that he did this in such so little time. But the more important aspect of this is why AR matters. It's not the games.
Yeah, the games are clever and they will push the technology. Mm-hmm, games sure. Do that. Like if you
and they're fun, they're great. I'm not belittling the games either.
Yeah, but if you want to see what sort of mathematic technology and graphics technology is going to be in Excel 2 years from now, look at what video games are doing now. And so the video games are important for AR in that sense. But looking at what he did, to me, it totally validated Apple's push into augmented reality, because it's that data that's important to you in the moment that's going to really matter.
Right. And then when I hear someone like John Keat, I'm not going to name names. Talk about how AR has no value, that, you know, the games are worthless and things like that. It's like, you're missing the picture, man. What Harley Turn showed us is why AR matters. I'll use another example. Harry Potter Wizards Unite. Mm-hmm. That's the Pokemon Go like game that's being based on that will be based on the Harry Potter universe. So you'd be able to walk around with your phone in front of your face, seeing, you know, magical creatures and, you know, I'm going to say, if they don't release a wand that works in conjunction with my phone app, that's just such a lost opportunity. I certainly hope they do that.
I hope they do it too. I mean, didn't Nintendo do Pokemon balls?
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
You would know. I didn't play the game. You did, though.
I did, all the way up until they made it not fun for me.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. And Harry Potter Wizards Unite is going to be great. Can't wait to play it. Can't wait to have fun with it.
Yeah.
Even though I'm going to have to hold my phone up in front of my face.
And your wand.
And my wand. Hopefully, my wand. You haven't been to Universal Park, right?
No.
Do you know about the wands there?
Yes, I do. And that's one of the reasons why I'm totally with you. They have to make wands for this game.
They have to make wands.
Oh,
they
wait. Wands. I didn't play Straight Man, so you could explain why the wands are important. Well, Brian.
You tell us about the wands if you know about them.
Okay, so from what I understand, you get your wand, and it's linked to you. So it has like a temporary account. And so then you can perform magic tricks in specific places with it. And
I'll take over. So you get a wand. There's two kinds of wands. There's an inactive wand and an interactive wand. So the inactive wand is just a prop. All based on the movie, of course. So this is within the Universal theme park, the Harry Potter world, which is just like, just so wonderful. I can't even begin to describe how much I like it. The interactive wands are tied to certain locations within the park, and specifically within the Harry Potter world, where if you wave them in the right pattern, you will cause something to happen in the real world, like something to move or music to start playing, or, you know, like a book to animate, etc.
That is so cool.
It's super cool, super fun. So, you know, we should be able to do the same sort of thing with the Harry Potter Wizards Unite, which is, again, the Pokemon Go like game, where they have a wand that is communicating with your smartphone, and as you're looking through your smartphone, you should be able to wave your wand and, you know, cast spells at other people or even AR present monsters. Right? Come on, you should be able to do that.
You should be able to do that. And
if you can't do that, I'm going to be so mad.
And if your hand and wand are in the AR view area where it can track you, then it should do the appropriate spell based on your movement, right?
If it's like a Bluetooth, I'm thinking like if they're doing either probably not RFID because it's too short range, but if they're doing any kind of Bluetooth connectivity with a motion sensor, mm-hmm. it shouldn't need to be within the view of your phone. You should actually just be able to do the right motion.
Okay,
that's the way I would do it if I was making this. And it turns out they didn't ask me.
Which is just crazy.
It's crazy. I mean, like, why would they not ask me? But they didn't. But that's the way I would do it, and I hope so. Even without it, I'm gonna love that game. But that's still not the point, because as cool as that game is, that's not the everyday aspect of AR. The everyday aspect of AR is being able to get information at either at just presented in your vision or attached to a location or attached to like a book, right? Like,
pick up a book in a physical bookstore. So like you go to Barnes and Noble and you pick up a book and you see ratings for the book. You can read reviews. And if you have friends that have read the book and you say like Goodreads then you can see what your friends thought of the book.
Yeah, or information about the author, when the book was released, the summation of the book, the back cover. There's all kinds of things that could be presented on that. Yelp reviews for a restaurant. Directions, life-changing directions that actually, you know, draw arrows down the street. Mm-hmm.
Preload the shopping list that you need for the grocery store into your device. And now you're going through the grocery store and it's highlighting, go down here to get this.
Yes.
And
which aisle's it on? Oh, Costco would hate that.
Of course they would, because I've only been in Costco a couple times and it kind of freaked me out. But I get how the system is set up. It's really to route you through and maximize purchases.
Yeah, Costco very specifically doesn't put things in the same place and mixes stuff up so that you have to go through the whole store to find stuff. It's a deliberate adventure from their perspective. They're setting up an experience setting up a system where you're going to want to go through the whole store. That's their idea, and quite frankly, I think they do it very successfully. But they would hate this if you could, you know, if like there was some sort of crowdsourced AR app that told you where the olives were today.
Oh my God.
Right. So you could go straight to get the olives. I'm saying that, by the way, because they've been selling some really, really delicious olives at Costco the last few months. But that would make someone like Costco kind of cranky. But and maybe even grocery stores too. Although at the same time, people being able to find things in grocery stores could actually enhance purchases. It's hard to tell.
You know, I think,
like, where's the Velveeta, Jeff? I know that you can't eat the Velveeta, but like store and to be honest, maybe no one should eat the Velveeta.
I don't know. I'm assuming the Velveeta is on the petroleum aisle, but I don't know.
Well, some grocery stores have Velveeta with cheese. Some grocery stores have Velveeta refrigerated, and some grocery stores don't, because you don't need to refrigerate it because it's not actual food. It's just delicious.
Velveeta, just so you know.
Here's the deal. Queso dip in Tex-Mex speak.
Mm-hmm.
Velveeta and Rotel. Rotel would be a stewed tomato, a spicy stewed tomato in a can.
Okay.
Velveeta and Rotel. Listen, everybody that's listening to this who's ever had Velveeta and Rotel knows, like, can I get a high five, please? I mean, like, they know what I'm talking about.
I'm going to start getting messages tasty from people telling me what I'm missing out on and how sad they are that I can't do dairy.
Is there any dairy in Velveeta?
Yeah.
Is there dairy in
you beat me to it.
1 ounce of Velveeta contains 13% of your daily value for calcium.
That doesn't say if there's dairy.
Has lactose.
Oh, then so I can't do it.
Yeah. All right, you can't do it. So anyway, all the rest of us. Rotel, Velveeta, delicious with the tortilla chips. It's just, it's really tasty. But different grocery stores carry it in different places. And if I had an app that would tell me where the Velveeta is, I would have to wander around looking for the Velveeta.
Right. And but see, a store, they could tie into that too. Here's where the Velveeta is, and here's the special we're running.
Or, yes, absolutely.
Or maybe you like to go in and get the store's version, so you get Del Vita, and so you get over there and you're looking at the Del Vita and you get the pop up that says, "Hey, here's your dollar off coupon for Velveeta,"
and upsell. Yes. You. By the way, there's have you seen the like breakfast bar / cookie-ish product called Belvita with a B as in boy?
No.
Why would they call them? Why would they call the product that? Belvita has been a thing for decades. Why would they do a new brand called Belvita? Why would they do that? Why? I want to know why. That's crazy.
My guess is that they panicked.
Belvita.
Yeah. And yeah, that, you know, they're in at the business license office, and they're like, so what are you calling your thing? And they panicked, and that's just what they yelled out, and now they're committed.
You may be onto something there. Anyway, that's like the 77th tangent rabbit hole we've gone down in just the first. What do we got?
We're at 21 minutes.
Okay, yeah, 21 minutes, and we've had 77 different rabbit holes. And I guess that's doing pretty good for us.
Yeah, so we need to step up our game.
Yes, we need to step up our game. So this thing, this demonstration this guy did, it, well done, kudos to him. Woohoo, man, it's awesome. It is what I've been excited about for... It is a tiny example of why I've been excited about AR since Apple announced this big push with ARKit one, first ARKit.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm sitting here thinking about all of this, and I'm liking where we're seeing this going, because, you know, it's useful for consumers. My assumption is that John Keat, who we're not naming right now, is swearing like a sailor. And calling us out for everything we've said as pointless and useless and worthless. But I have another area where I see this as really useful. Let's say you are in a hospital, you're a doctor or a nurse, and you are checking a patient. You can see their vitals in real time. Just, you know, you look at a patient and now you're seeing all of their vitals. And if, you know, if they have an IV, you see immediately what's being dripped into them. And so, you know, all the drugs that they're taking, and you've got all the status updates on someone.
Yeah, sure. 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 Or let's say you have a gluten intolerance or a lactose intolerance.
Mm-hmm.
Or a peanut allergy.
Mm-hmm.
This stuff could be posted to buildings before you go in, though. Like, not posted to the buildings. It could be attached to the building before you go in.
Sure.
To the restaurant. You know, I mean, there is no end to the kinds of information. Like, people's name in your car. I mean, this is what Google Glass was trying to bring us in many ways. Right. And we bagged on that. But the reason why I bagged on Google Glass is because Google was viewing Glass as a way to get more information about the Google Glass users, and then also the people that they see.
Yes. And
associations.
People,
and
yes. Yeah. They charge people a lot of money to be test data collectors.
Yeah. And it was that aspect as opposed to the, I mean, like, so I we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves, because right now ARKit relies on us holding our iPhone or our iPad in front of our faces as we walk around.
Right. And ultimately, that's not a viable solution. It's okay for right now, because
we talked about that.
Yeah. Start with what you have.
You got to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually we will be going to Glass like thing. And the thing is, I trust Apple to do that because I trust Apple to make or endorse a pair of glasses or a pair of goggles. Although I mean, goggles aren't the long-term solution either.
No,
goggles are fine for VR, but they're not good for, they're not a long-term solution for AR.
I don't even think they're good for VR.
They're fine for VR.
Have you used them for any length of time?
It's a fair point. I would call goggles for VR the same sort of first step that holding an iPhone in front of your face for AR is.
I'll accept that.
Okay. So we're headed to eventually some kind of glass, a pair of glasses, or and then eventually a contact lens of some sort, and then eventually some sort of brain implant that'll do all this stuff. Yes.
Eventually we'll get the Futurama iPhone. Shut up and take my money.
Yes, exactly. And this thing that we saw is why this stuff will end up being so important. Oh, I went off on my digression. I trust Apple to make or endorse a pair of goggles that can watch where I'm going and not collect that information to use it against me.
If any company's in a position to take something like that mainstream and protect our privacy, right now, Apple's the company.
Right. And I'm explaining, I'm going off on this particular angle to explain what may otherwise appear to people who have been listening to us for a long time and reading what we have to say as being okay with Apple doing what we were not okay with Google doing. And it's that difference in philosophy that is the entire crux of the matter.
Yeah.
And so I trust Apple on the privacy side. I trust Apple to, if it's going to be watching where I'm going, to keep that data local to my device and not collect it and not store it. And the reason why I want Apple to do this is what we saw in this video. So we'll have a link to that video in the show notes. If you haven't already watched it, please do. Love to hear what anybody thinks.
Yeah, it's really short, but it's also really compelling.
Yeah. Yeah, within the context, it's a quick demo. It's a quick demo of attaching data to a physical object and then manipulating that object in real space and seeing the attached data manipulated at the same time.
Yeah, it's really cool.
It's super cool. Super cool. All right. So in the meanwhile, good folks at LinkedIn Jobs are sponsoring us.
They are. And Brian, I would love to tell you about this because I did some research to figure out what's up.
Really?
I know.
That seems kind of extreme.
Sometimes I just go way out there.
Yeah, okay. All right.
So here's the deal. First, we know that LinkedIn is the world's largest professional online network. And right now, over 70% of the workforce in the United States is using LinkedIn in one form or another. Wow. Yeah. And so knowing that we have that large of a pool of people using LinkedIn, and many of them are job hunting with LinkedIn, it's not just they're networking with other businesses, that they're on the hunt for a better gig. Sure. So with that much happening in that space, it totally makes sense that we have LinkedIn Jobs, which is the job posting service that LinkedIn offers. So if you are hunting for a new employee, it makes sense to use LinkedIn Jobs. And it's not just because of the sheer volume of people that become potential candidates. It's because the candidates that you're going to get, by and large, are going to be far more qualified than when you do just a generic job posting somewhere else. So you have a higher likelihood of finding exactly the right person to fill that job that you have. So why wouldn't you use LinkedIn Jobs? And because you all listen to Apple Context Machine, you're going to get a special deal for that first job hunt that you're doing to find that perfect employee. So here's what you need to do. Go to linkedin.com/ACM and get a $50 credit towards your first job post. That's linkedin.com/TDO for your $50 credit today. And terms and conditions do apply. And yeah, this is a great way to find that perfect someone to fill that job you have. And they're happy, you're happy, your business is happy. What more could you want? LinkedIn.com/ACM. Yeah. So thank you, LinkedIn.
Yeah. Thank you, LinkedIn. In Jobs, as a matter of fact. Yes. And thank you for filling us in on that, Jeff.
Oh, sure thing. I've got your back.
Yeah, of course. All righty. Let's see. We also have, I'm gonna have to ask you to brace yourself.
Oh, crap. Okay.
All right. Here's the long version of my title for the second topic for the show.
Okay.
Maybe Brian should think differently about surveillance capitalism.
Sorry. That was my jaw.
Yeah. Oh, sorry about that. That probably hurt.
Oh, wow.
Foley effects by Jeff Gamet.
Yeah, that's why we have the interns.
All right. So you were trying to rile me up before the show.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, sometimes I do that.
Yeah, sometimes. And you were talking about Ring's new announcements.
Yes. Yeah, so the short version is Ring Alarm, which is Ring's do-it-yourself home security system, is available for pre-order. $200, and you get the kit that has a door sensor, a motion sensor, the keypad for controlling everything, a range extender. You know, it's everything you need. And you can sign up for professional monitoring or not, because it sends all the alerts right to your phone. And it works with the other Ring products. So, you know, like the cameras and smoke detectors, all of that stuff. So, yeah. Shipping in a couple weeks.
And, of course, Amazon.
Amazon owned. Yeah. Amazon bought Ring a little over a year ago, as I recall.
Yeah, maybe even longer than that. But it's been a while. And you noted as you were pitching me this topic, you noted that
here's how I tried to trigger you. Here's how I pitched this to you. Uh-huh. So here's another way for you to get riled up about Amazon knowing more about us.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And I don't think you expected my reaction. My reaction being that, you know, maybe we should talk about whether or not I should think differently about surveillance capitalism. Because there is, and by surveillance capitalism, what we're talking about is where companies look at everything we do. And, you know, everything we post online, Google, Facebook in particular, Twitter to a lesser extent, credit card companies. And they build profiles on us, and they, you know, every little piece of information that they can get on us, they compile into that profile, and then they sell access to us to advertisers, and that's how they generate revenue.
So what could possibly go wrong?
And not very observant listeners, or can you be an observant listener?
Yes.
How does that work?
Observation involves all of your skills.
Oh, yeah, fair enough. All right. So not very observant listeners.
Observant olfactory observers.
Fair enough.
Do you like that?
I do like that. I do like that. So not very observant listeners will know that I've got a bee in my bonnet about surveillance capitalism and that I hate it. And I think one thing that we really haven't talked a whole lot about is the benefit of surveillance capitalism. And this kind of goes back to like an early conversation with Dave Hamilton, my business partner here at the Mac Observer.
Mm-hmm.
You might know him from such podcasts as TDO and the Mac Geek Gab.
By the way, new rabbit hole. Happy anniversary to Mac Geek Gab.
Oh, yeah. Happy anniversary, guys.
Big 13. Isn't that awesome?
13 years. Dave Hamilton and John F. Braun have been doing the Mac Geek Gab. It's a very, very successful podcast.
13 years.
13 years. 13 incredible.
Episodes.
No, 13 years.
That is awesome.
We've done 13 episodes.
We have. There was a time when we were pretty proud of the fact that we had 13 episodes.
Yeah, it only took like 2 years.
Yeah, but we're kind of getting the hang of this now.
Yeah, we're easing into it. Anyway,
yeah.
Anyway, Dave Hamilton was noting to me a long time ago, years and years and years, that targeted advertising is great from the standpoint of consumers. Like having things advertised to you that you might actually want versus random things that you may or may not mm-hmm. can be a great thing.
You know, I agree with that. Even with that kind of knot in my stomach that comes along with realizing that there's companies that know way too much about me or more than I'm comfortable with. But still, I tend to see ads more often that are at least appropriate for me, even if I'm not directly interested in that moment.
Yeah, sure. Fair enough.
You know, the big place that's totally nailed it for me. It's going to hurt to hear Facebook.
Yeah. Explain.
Facebook. I buy so many t-shirts because of Facebook.
Ah,
seriously. They get sure. They get the right t-shirt ads in front of me all the time. I also see Lego all the time. And then I see sci-fi related stuff a lot too.
Well, it's because Facebook has a big note on your profile that says, "Oh yeah, he's that guy."
Yeah, I know. You know those photos that people see of Zuckerberg in the office, and there's the tape over the camera. That's not a piece of tape. That's a note about me. And it just says Jeff Gamet : that guy.
That guy. That guy. So yeah, targeted advertising. There is absolutely something to be said about it. And there's also something to be said about Amazon knowing that you need paper towels.
Yes.
Or that it's time for you to buy new underwear. I don't know if they do. You know, whatever. Let's just go with it. They probably do.
Hey, you know, as long as we're on the Amazon part of this, I'm going to take this into the real world because, you know, we can buy stuff in Amazon-owned stores now, like Whole Foods.
Right.
And they've just recently started doing this thing where if you're an Amazon Prime subscriber, you get special in-store deals. Yeah. But it also means that Amazon is getting detailed information about all of your purchases because you yes. have to do the scan the code thing. On one hand, I'm feeling like, man, do I really want Amazon to know that much about my purchase habits? But they know more than anyone else because I buy so much off Amazon.
Yeah, Facebook probably knows more than anyone else.
Yeah, but just for my general purchase habits, I mean, Amazon even knows exactly what car I have.
Go ahead.
Because I bought car parts.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And I went to buy parts to my hatchback on my Volvo Cross Country. The shock strut thing stopped working. So I went to order them, and I picked a set for a 2001 Volvo Cross Country, and I have a 2000, and it popped up a dialogue. Hey, that's not for your car.
Wow.
Yeah.
And, wow.
And the hair on my arm stood up, and then I clicked the link for the right one and bought the right thing.
Sure, fair enough.
And was so happy I bought the right thing.
Here's another benefit from surveillance capitalism. Mm-hmm. Part of how Amazon can get things to us so insanely fast. I've had things delivered same day. Have you done that yet?
No, but I'll be able to do that soon. They're building a new warehouse in, I think, around Thornton. So nearish to me. And then I'll get same day stuff.
Okay, so I've done that. It's kind of like, you know, living in the future, and even having something delivered the next day, quite frankly, would have been insanity. What, 10 years ago, 5 years, 6 years ago?
6 years ago, you could get some overnight delivery for Amazon, but it cost a lot, right? I don't know. I've never had overnight delivery as a reasonable option. So let's go with that, 6 years ago. Yeah. And in the meantime, I'm just going to sit here and fantasize about you getting drone deliveries because you can get same day stuff. So I'm assuming the drone things are coming. I got sidetracked. I want to go back to the part of the grocery store thing, the barcode thing that you scan so that you get special discounts. This means that Amazon now knows everything I buy all the time. So I'm waiting for them to figure out from how often I repurchase the same things before they start sending me push notifications. Hey, you are probably out of paper towels, or you're about to be out.
Sure.
You should go pick some up.
Sure. And I apologize for, I had to mute. I've got lawn people right out. Like it seems like they're like forming a club right outside my window.
What I heard is that they're trying to get in so that they can mow your shag carpet.
Oh, that could be it too. So part of the reason why Amazon do insane things like same day delivery and next day delivery, and you know, all of these things that is completely remade buying online, is because they are projecting what they're going to need, and they have it. They have all this stuff in the right place, in the right warehouse, ready to be shipped because they've determined, you know, percentages of chances of these things being needed for this given area of time. And that is part and parcel of all these profiles that they build from us.
Mm-hmm.
You take that away, and Amazon's ability to be this, at least some of Amazon's ability to have these insane logistics goes away.
Yeah, that's true. And then that means that we end up paying more for products. Okay, so we're sitting here waxing poetic about surveillance capitalism. And I'm still having a hard time, to some degree, listening to you do that. At what point does it cross the line where it just feels too invasive and too creepy?
Well, we could probably ask this in a different way. You probably know me well enough to hear the smile on my face.
Yes. So I was totally feeding that to you so you could run with it.
The question is, maybe Brian should think differently about surveillance capitalism. And the answer is, no, of course not. Screw surveillance capitalism. Screw it. There are certainly lots of benefits to it. And I'm not going to deny those benefits. I'm not going to deny those benefits, especially with Amazon. I'm probably actually more okay with Amazon's model than I am with Facebook's model. And I'm okay with targeted ads, but I want ads to be targeted to the content I'm reading and not to my profile.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
And this thing just gelled in my head right now. So we'll see where this goes. All right. So with what Amazon is doing to be able to target the right products to you,
mm-hmm.
how different is that from when we used to go into a store where the people that ran the store knew us, knew a lot about us, knew what our shopping patterns were, and would suggest purchases to us
based on the difference.
And we called that customer service, yeah, even though they were surveilling us in a manner of speaking.
But the difference is that when their house gets broken into, right, the bad guys don't get all my data. They don't get all those observations.
Unless the people that were in the store were keeping notes.
Even still, the issue here is that these companies, especially the mega companies, the Amazons, the Facebooks, the Googles, they are amassing this information, and them having it is no better than any government having it. Because at some point, they can misuse it. At some point, it can be stolen. At some point, it can be released accidentally. What do we have? 14 million? What was the thing with Facebook recently?
It was...
Like yet another thing with Facebook.
Yeah, 14 million. It was literally millions of posts that weren't supposed to be public were made public for several days.
Yeah, as a product of another Facebook experiment. Oh, I'm sorry, a test. At least theoretically, it wasn't a psychology test.
Well, that's a really good psychology test. How many of our customers are going to get upset when their private posts are made public?
That's true. Maybe that was it was a feature, not a bug. And they called it a bug. And then they waited weeks to tell us, and then had the audacity to brag about how this was them being the new transparent, awesome Facebook. What the Mark Zuckerberg does not have the wisdom to handle the power that he has. They just keep making mistakes. How many mistakes does Facebook get to make? And they make these mistakes, and they apologize, and then they keep on. They don't change anything. This is a huge problem.
Mm-hmm.
Not even the tiniest little bit humble opinion. But when companies have this information about us, they can use it. And I don't mean... I'm talking about something that could happen in the future. Actually, we could talk about Facebook manipulating some users' feeds to see if negative news affected them differently than positive news.
That was what, right? A year or two ago?
Yeah, it was a couple of years ago at least. And I mean, that, in my opinion, that was them weaponizing their profiles against those users on whom they were experimenting. And that's just one little experiment that we know about. We have no idea what else they've done.
Yeah, right? That experiment was completely inappropriate. And
freaks me out.
And to me, that's the event that totally justifies your statement that Zuckerberg doesn't have the wisdom to go along with his success.
The power
he's
accumulated from his success, to be sure. I mean, you know, there's a lot that Facebook has done. You know, Facebook's whole thing is like, our mission is to bring people together, and we think that bringing people together is better than the will make the world a better place. And so essentially, therefore, anything necessary to make that possible is therefore justified.
Which is unfortunate.
Wrong. That part is wrong.
Yeah, I mean, the first part is great. Let's bring people together and make a community.
Only in the abstract.
Yeah, but
only in the abstract. The silification, for instance, that we've seen throughout the world,
yeah,
would be an example of that not necessarily being true.
Yeah. Well,
it's not. Yes, but in the abstract, it's great.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
Right. So, I don't think that I should think differently about surveillance capitalism. I do think it's important to acknowledge and be cognizant of the benefits that surveillance capitalism does bring us. Amazon, to me, is the shiningest example of that. And another shining example, I suppose, would be Google, and to a lesser extent Facebook, from the standpoint of, I don't have to write a check to these companies every month. LOL, writing checks, but you know, I don't have to hand over money. I just have to privacy.
Yeah.
On a daily basis.
And really, what's that worth?
Yeah, what exactly. And but, you know, to some people that's worth a lot. And especially, you know, to Mark Zuckerberg's point that he made in front of Congress, in emerging markets, people could not afford to pay what it cost Amazon, or excuse me, what it cost Facebook to be able to bring the connections and services that they do. That kind of goes back to my piece where he's essentially saying that only rich people can afford privacy. Everybody else should just eat non-privacy cake.
Yeah.
I'm gonna stretch that metaphor as far as I can.
Man, I think something snapped in that one.
So, I don't think I should think differently about it. But we should all be aware of the benefits that it does bring, and we should constantly question those trade-offs. And it should be an ongoing discussion, and not just. You know, something where, you know, like, for instance, I dogmatically cling to my position simply because that's kind of what I do. I try not, I personally want to always be taking in new information and adjusting my expectations and preconceptions where appropriate. Not saying that I always achieve that, but I certainly want to be that person.
Well, so we started off with me needing to file a workman's comp complaint when my jaw hit the floor.
Yes.
And then led into you not being able to convince yourself that surveillance capitalism is good.
Surveillance capitalism is not worth it. I just listed benefits for surveillance capitalism.
Yeah.
Particularly with Amazon. Amazon brings us tremendous benefits, even while they, you know, help destroy the merchant class and therefore the middle class. But there are so many amazing benefits that come out of Amazon's version of surveillance capitalism. Those are absolutely good things. The question is, how much is it worth it? Is it worth it to me to have an Amazon camera in my house? And the answer is no. Is it worth it to me to give Amazon access to my house by putting a digital lock that they can open? And the answer is a clear no.
How about a microphone?
No, it is not to me.
And there are plenty of people that are in my position where that microphone is so convenient.
Sure, absolutely. And you have clearly made the calculus that it is worth the trade-off.
But I won't put a camera in.
A different calculus.
Yeah, I won't put Amazon's cameras in.
Why? Why wouldn't you?
Well, because the control that I want to have over the cameras, I'm getting from other products, first off. Amazon hasn't shown me that their products are going to offer me anything of value that goes beyond what I'm getting from the cameras that I have total control over.
Yeah, okay, but why? Okay, all right. Yeah, fair enough. I don't really think there's much of a difference between the microphone and the cameras. I mean, there's very little that they can't tell from the microphones. They just, you know, don't necessarily see you walking around or...
Yeah, that's the big thing right there, that they don't have the photos of me walking around in my underwear. All right, so to that end, I'm going to share a personal story with you.
Oh, boy. So, I can't wait to see where this goes.
Yeah, so you know how I have like all these different brands of cameras that I've played with, and so I have my place set up so that except for the bedroom and bathroom, there's no place in my place that you can go where you wouldn't be on camera when the cameras are running. And they're all set so that when I leave, they turn on. When I come home, they turn off.
Sure.
And one of the cameras, it wasn't doing that. And I realized when I went to check and look at a motion detection alert that I'd gotten, and I saw additional videos from earlier in the day when I had been home. So then I started scrolling back through private day or previous days and previous weeks, and the amount of footage of me walking through my place was just astounding. So that was a camera where all the data was stored on an SD card, not on the cloud. I popped the card out, I unplugged the camera, and I reformatted the card.
Sure.
And that camera's done. It'll never be used again. Actually, you know what? I'm totally okay saying what camera it was. It was D-Link's Omna. So it's unplugged. It's off in a box now, and that's it.
Yeah, that's good. I get that.
Yeah. I think that's part of the reason why I'm not cool with the Amazon camera, because right now I just don't feel like I have enough control over what it records. So apparently I'm drawing the line at my underpants.
Well, by not enough control, you mean zero control, because that stuff is going off somewhere else.
Yeah.
As are, you know, so yeah. All right. Fair enough. I get the difference. I don't personally see much of a difference in the microphone in that. But you know, to each their own.
Yeah, well, you know.
All right, I don't know how much noise from the lawn folks is coming over the microphone.
You know, there was a little bit earlier. I think that's when they really wanted to get into the living room, but it's not a problem now.
Okay, well, that's good. I certainly hope it's not a problem right now, because I'm still hearing it. Hopefully you aren't, but I appreciate everyone's forbearance.
Yeah, I'm okay. I mean, as long as I don't hear you screaming and saying, get the lawnmower off of me, I think we're okay.
Okay, fair enough.
But, you know, we're also like at the end of the show. So
yes.
So you only have a couple minutes left where we can all verify that you're safe.
All right. Well, we better plug on that then.
All right. Well, good luck, Brian. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. Thanks hugely to LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring us this week.
Yes, head over to their website, linkedin.com/ACM, and get $50 credit towards your first job posting.
That's pretty remarkable. That's all for this week.
And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.